This is an oral history interview with Stuart A. Ralston, conducted at 1506 National Avenue, Rockford, Illinois, on July 11, 1975. Joanne Reed is the interviewer for Rockford Public Library. Stuart, you told me that your birthday was August 17, 1889. Where were you born?
I was born in the village of Caledonia in Boone County on August 17th, 1889, in a small house situated on the lot diagonally across from the Congregational Church in the village, which house was moved up the street later on and placed on a vacant lot, the building now being the property of David Caldwell Ralston, a cousin. Our new house was built, including inside plumbing, which created more or less of a scandal in the village at the time, thinking that that wasn't the way that that should be handled. However, it was accepted finally, and with a big front porch, which seemed an extravagance to many people, was also finally admitted to be a great thing after they had come up and sat on it for a while and looked off into the beautiful distance over the fields and woodlands to the south east of home. The village at that time was a lovely setting with, of course, grassy streets in the main with tracks in the middle, and occupied by a group of people that represented many walks of life and of many different nationalities. This being due to the railroad which came through Caledonia and was a junction of the Wisconsin Division and the Kenosha Division.
Now, are you talking about Caledonia at about 1900 now, when you talked about the grassy streets?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Baseball was played wherever we could find a spot, and oftentimes in the streets because traffic was light in the back streets of the village. And especially up near the church, there was a spot big enough to carry on a baseball game, and that was the favorite spot. Although at school, there was a continuing game of baseball that went on not only at recess and noon, but also before school and after school. And the competition was terrific for each of the jobs on the team.
Was that baseball the very same as it would be today?
Yeah.
The game itself?
It was hard ball, but we had a whale of a team in Caledonia. We had a team we played all over. We played Belvedere, and we played Roscoe, we played Beloit, we played Rockford, teams from Rockford. We played Argyle, I don't know how many games.
And that was when you were in grade school?
Well, yeah, in grade school and high school. I think probably we got to our prime in when I was in the academy, which would be a high school. But we were good enough that most of us played on high school teams afterwards, so we had an outstanding team, really.
Did Did you have a coach for that, or did you just get together and play?
Just rough and tumble, struggling for a position on the team. Yeah, there was Bill Cunningham was a little older than we were, than most of the kids. Well, there was a whole bunch of kids about my age that happened at that time. See, that's how it was possible. Bill Cunningham was older, and he acted kind of as a coach and encouraged us. And his father, who ran the store and ran one of the stores in the village, was quite an enthusiast of sports as well.
Stuart, how many people were in your family?
My family consisted of my mother, whose maiden name was Mary Smith, and who was born on the farm known as Knock Bay, K-N-O-C-K-B-A-Y, on the outskirts of Campbellton in Argyllshire, Scotland. She came to this country at age 7, and her mother, when her father had died and her mother came over to Caledonia to marry a man by the name of McNeely, whom she had known in Campbellton. And Mr. McNeely was a manufacturer of shoes, and manufactured shoes what we called a shoe shop. And when we were boys, and of course the shoe shop had been discontinued as a place for making shoes, but in the office of the shoe shop, as it stood there and closed, there was a myriad of pigeonholes containing little wooden pegs that Mr. McNeely used in putting shoes together.
Hmm.
And that...
That was your, like your step-grandfather.
That'd be my step-grandfather. That's right. And he was the father of the mother of Bill Kelly, for example. Do you know Bill Kelly and Hazel Kelly?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, my mother was... She was a Smith, and they were McMillans. Their mother was McMillan, and they lived there in Caledonia, across the street from us. My brothers and sisters consisted of David Ralston, the oldest, who died at the age of 3 with scarlet fever, which at that time was a dread disease. Then I was born next, 3 years later. Then Bessie, 2 years later. Martha, 2 years later. John, 2 years later. Glenn, 2 years later. Mildred, 2 years later. And two boys who died in infancy. There were 8 children altogether.
You were born about the time that your oldest brother died then, weren't you?
Yes, he died. He was 3 years old when he died. I was a year old.
You can't.
Oh, I said 3 years. That should be 2 years. I was born 2 years after he was. That should be changed to 2 years. And then I would be a year old when he died at the age of three.
But of course you can't remember any of that, can you?
No. No.
That's a good-sized family. Is that one of the reasons that you moved from your...
Oh, heavens, yes.
Your house?
Sure.
You got a new big house?
Yeah. You don't know the house Dave Ralston lives in. Well, I'll tell you who lived there. McNair lived in Caledonia.
Mm-hmm. That's quite near where the school is.
Yeah, right across the street from the school. Mm-hmm. They've got it painted yellow now, bright yellow.
That's the house that you were born in?
That's the house I was born in.
And then you moved it from where it was to that location.
Yeah.
And then you moved out of that house into a new house that your father built?
Yeah. We moved that house. We ate breakfast on the old site in the morning. We had lunch halfway up at night. And we had dinner on the new site that night. We lived in the house all the time it was being moved. Mother never got out of the house.
How was that possible?
Well, they just put some great big timbers underneath the house and then jacked it up on rollers and then started to roll it. And they rolled it out to the street and up the street and back into the new lot.
And that was still in the days of horses.
That was in the days of horses. You see, they had the way they worked, they had a turnstile, two horses going around in a circle with a great big drum, and cable was wrapped around the drum. And you see, as they wound up the cable on the drum, it dragged the house along at a low reduction of speed. So that was...
Was that a customary thing to do in those days?
Yeah, it was quite a customary thing because, they moved it so slowly, you know, there was no trouble of keeping things up.
But it was a considerably smaller house then.
Well, it's the same size as it is now, exactly.
That doesn't seem to me small.
Dave's house?
Yeah.
Well, it was a... See, we had a parlor, and we had a living room, and we had a dining room, and we had a kitchen, and we had a back storage room. It was...
And about five bedrooms upstairs.
No, upstairs, it was all one floor.
All one floor. Then where did you sleep?
Well, we probably slept at least two in the bed, and let's see, we had one, two, three. We had three bedrooms with a couple of beds in each one of them. And I don't remember that we were crowded.
How old were you when that happened, when you moved out?
When we moved, I was probably about seven, I think.
And then how old were you when your dad built the new house?
Yeah, that's when I was about seven.
Oh. move that house to a vacant lot in order to build a new house on the place where you had had the old house. And you lived in the smaller house for a year or so while your father was making the new big house. What was unusual about that new house?
Well, of course, it was. It had, as I said before, an indoor toilet, and then it had a big, great big porch out in front. And people thought that that was a terrible waste of space. But honestly, that porch has been more of a room to the whole family than any other room in the house. Because in the summertime, it's a lovely place to... You see, we own the half a block the other way across from the church. In other words, we own... This McNeely's was quite an operator. He owned this lot here, this whole block. And then when our grandmother died, we got this half of the lot, this half of the block. And so we had a big garden there, and we had a cow, and I had to milk the cow, which I hated. And this was a pasture. The cow was there. And then this was the old garden. We raised sorghum and potatoes, raised all the potatoes we ever needed. And you see, we lived pretty darn primitively. We raised a great deal of the stuff that we used to keep us alive, keep the whole family alive, from this garden. Potatoes, and Dad used to raise celery, and then he would bleach it. So that when we picked the celery was all white. And the way he did that, he'd plant these little plants. And then at a certain time, he would take a tile and set that tile over the top of the celery. And then the celery would eventually grow up through, but everything below that would be bleached white. And then when we would take the tile off and take a stalk of celery up to the house, it'd be all beautifully white and very tender. So then we could see from our front porch, we could see across here and over to the John Andrew. Down here, and then these fields were always so beautiful. And that's
to the east.
To the east. Well, it's southeast, kind of.
You're sitting on your porch and looking across your garden into the woods
across, and then eventually into the woods.
And how did you cultivate your garden?
Well, we used a horse, of course, and a plow to get it worked in the first place. And then it was all done by hoe and rake. We planted the seed by hand, and then we kept the weeds out with a hoe, just the old-fashioned hoe, that was it.
Did all you kids have to help?
Well, yes, I got the brunt of it because I was the oldest, and of course, when they came along, the pressure was a little less, you know, and I suppose we bought more stuff, and I think we had, I don't know, we'd sold any of this. But when I was down in Florida a couple of years ago, Dave Ralston, or Elmer, as we used to call him, remembers that we used to have Christmas up at our house, and then all the Ralstons would come with Jim, J.R., and Dan's family, and then we had a target over here, and we used to shoot a rifle across here.
Across the street.
Across the street. Well, of course, there's nothing over here to hit. So, except Sarah Slowey's cows, she...
Except what?
Sarah Slowey's cows. Sarah Sloy lived in the house across the street from the doctor's office toward the railroad track.
Was there a doctor's office there then?
No, but where,
okay,
it is now.
Where it is now.
That was,
okay,
Katie McCarthy's house. And she lived there with three or four cows, and she wore a black dress and a red shawl, and she tended those cows in the streets of Caledonia her entire life. That was her pasture. Her cows ate the grass in the streets of Caledonia.
Wouldn't they wander all over?
She watched them all day. She was out there all day long with those cattle.
Hmm.
Five or six cows.
Did people have fences around their yards, around their houses?
Some of them did. We did. Well, we did in the old house. I don't believe we did afterwards.
So she would just keep them out of people's yards.
She had a stick, and she called them by name, and she would tap them gently if they did anything wrong, get them back in line. She was a character.
You said she did that all her life. Was that, did she raise them for the milk, or why
oh,
was
sure.
she doing
she
that?
Oh, sure, she sold milk. That was their livelihood, selling milk and eggs. They raised chickens, and that's how they got money
to the people in Caledonia?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Where else? How could she get any place else? They didn't have a horse.
Oh.
Oh, did they? Maybe they did have a horse. They had an acre or two of land there, so I guess probably they did have a horse. But they wouldn't drive out to sell eggs. People came in and got them.
I see.
Lots of people came to Caledonia to get groceries. See, there are two big grocery stores there. One on each side of the tracks. Cunningham was up on the hill, and the Wilson store was down below.
What else was in the business part of town besides the grocery stores?
A thing of great interest was the blacksmith shop. And to anyone interested in what a blacksmith shop was then, can find an exact replica of it on the Rockford Museum Association's ground at the present time, equipped just exactly like the old blacksmith shop was in Caledonia.
Mm.
And it's a tremendous thing. The kids just love it. They go over there, you know, and he sticks a rod into the fire, and then he works the bellows, and the air comes up through the tuyere and into the coals, and the coals flare up. Then he takes that iron out and puts it on an anvil and hits it with a hammer, and the sparks fly, and the school kids just love it. they go out there and watch him make stuff.
Do you remember being in the blacksmith shop in Caledonia?
Oh, heavens, do I ever. I used to love to watch the old... Colin Lang was the blacksmith, and he was an expert blacksmith. And to see him grab the hind foot of a horse and take that big rasp and file that horse's hoof down, and then take a red-hot shoe and fit it onto the horse's hoof, and see that stinking smell of burned hoof go up your nose, and then he would, if it didn't fit exactly, he would take it back and shape it again, but he would bring that hot shoe up against the horse's hoof.
It doesn't hurt the horse?
No, of course that's not a nerveless tissue in a hoof. But, and then he made hoops for the kids out of probably quarter inch round iron. And he made one for me one time that I thought was a beauty. It was a hoop, and it had a ring around that hoop. And you took a hold of this end of the rod, and you pushed that. And as you pushed it, this thing would roll forward. And then you could keep that hoop going lickety-split just by pushing on that rod.
And the hoop was how big in diameter?
Well, it'd probably be 2.5 or 3 feet
in
diameter.
And there was a round circle, or a smaller hoop around the big hoop, and then a stick from that small circle.
Well, all there was, this is
just
a
like
rod,
handle.
A handle, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, as you pushed, you would push down low to start it, down there like that. You'd push down there to get it going. And then later on you would move it up here, and then you could keep that thing going forever without hitting it. You know, the ordinary way of rolling a hoop would be to hit it, keep hitting it. But this way we didn't hit it, we just pushed on that rod and kept it going that way.
And you ran behind it?
Ran behind it.
Would you race those, or?
Oh, sure, we'd have all kinds of goings on with them.
Hmm. Like
know.
What?
Well, races or... Or we'd take them up to school. Or we'd all the kids would have those hoops, you know, and races would develop on the spur of the moment. Then there was in the town there was a sidewalk ran down the main street. That was the only sidewalk in town. That
the
was
cement?
A wooden sidewalk. 2x4 set on end and then cross boards across it. And that was the racetrack for bicycles and also for walking and all the rest of the activities in the town. And then in the corner, there was this bandstand. And that was right across from the blacksmith shop. And the bandstand was occupied every Saturday night by the Caledonia Band. And they had a band comprised of people in the village and then farmers around there that played in the band. And then the people would gather around and they would sell pop or whatever around the place. And every Saturday night there was a gang came in to hear the music.
You said they'd sell pop.
Well, yeah, they sold pop in those days, and the bottle was made like this. There'd be a...
It's fatter than a regular pop bottle today.
Yeah, it was fatter, and then the cork fitted here, like that.
Down in the neck.
Yeah. Then out of here came a handle, like that. And then this is all under pressure. It was carbonated water, you know, so this is all under pressure. So when you wanted to drink, you hit that thing down. You hit this thing down and drove the cork into the bottle, and then it would take this position. The cork would be down in here, like that. So that then the liquid could flow out, and you drank the pop. That's the kind of pop we had in those days. But that was back in those days too.
I didn't realize they had carbonated pop at that time.
Yeah, they...
Now that certainly wasn't made in Caledonia.
No, that would come in by train. Then the different... there was an ice cream parlor in Caledonia, too.
But they made their ice cream.
They made their own ice cream, but the pop was come in by train. Came in a wooden